44. "There she goes," whispered Charles Little without lowering his glasses. Upon the black turrets of Blücher the gunfire gleamed and sparkled without sound. Quickly he traversed his glasses across the surface of the sea until he found Orion. She was plunging in eagerly, narrowing the gap very rapidly between herself and Blücher. In another 7 minutes she would be able to return the Germans' fire. Suddenly, a quarter of a mile ahead of her, there rose from the sea a series of tall columns, stately as the columns of a Greek temple, slender and beautiful, shining like white marble in the sun. And then slowly they dropped back. "Short," grunted the navigating lieutenant. "Her guns are still cold," Charles commented. "Please God let old Orion get within range." Again Blücher's shells fell short, and short again, but each time they were closer to the low bulk of Orion, and the next broadside dropped all around her, partially screening her with spray, and Orion started to zigzag. "Another 3 minutes," the navigating lieutenant spoke with tension, making his voice husky. At regular intervals of 15 seconds, the German salvos fell around Orion, once within 50 feet of her bows, so that as she tore into the standing columns of spray, they blew back over her and mingled with the black smoke of her funnels. "Come on, old girl. Go in and get her. Go on. Go on." Charles was gripping the rail in front of him and cheering like a maniac, all the dignity of his rank and his 35 years gone in the tense excitement of the battle. It had infected all of them on the bridge of the destroyer, and they capered and shouted with him. "There she blows!" howled the lieutenant. "She's opening fire! Go to it, Orion! Go to it!" On Orion's forward turret gunfire sparkled, then again and again. The harsh roll of the broadsides carried to them across the light wind. "Short!" groaned Charles. "She's still out of range!" "Short again!" "Still short!" Each time the call of "shot" was signalled by the chief yeoman at the eldest lamp and briefly acknowledged from Orion's bridgeworks. "Oh, my God!" moaned Charles. "She's hit!" echoed his lieutenant. A flat, yellow glare, like sheet lightning on a summer's day, lit Orion's afterdeck, and almost immediately a ball of yellowish-grey smoke enveloped her. Through it, Charles saw her after-funnel sag drunkenly and hang back at an unnatural angle. "She's holding on." Orion emerged from the shell smoke and dragged it after her like a funeral cloak, but her speed seemed unabated, and the regular salvos burned briefly and brightly on her forward turrets. "Now she's hitting," exulted the lieutenant, and Charles turned quickly to see shellfire burst on Blücher, and his wide grin split his face. "Kill her! Kill her!" he roared, knowing that though Blücher was better armed, yet she was as vulnerable as Orion. Her plating was eggshell thin, and the 6-inch shells that crashed through it would be doing her terrible damage. Now the two cruisers were pounding each other. The range was closing so rapidly that soon they must hit with every broadside. This was a contest from which only one ship, or neither of them, would emerge. Charles was trying to estimate the damage that had been inflicted upon Blücher during the last few minutes. She was on fire forward. Sulphur-yellowed flames poured from her. Her upper works were riven in a grotesque sculpture of destruction, and a pall of smoke enveloped her, so her profile was shadowy and vague, yet every 15 seconds her turrets lit with those deadly little flashes. Charles turned to assess the relative damage that Orion had suffered. He found and held her with his binoculars, and at that moment Orion ceased to exist. Her boilers, pierced by high explosive shell, burst and tore her in half. A cloud of white steam spurted 500 feet into the air, completely blanketing her. The steam hung for 30 seconds, then sagged wearily and rolled aside. Orion was gone. A wide circle of oil slick and floating debris marked her grave. The speed of her charge had run her clean under. On the bridge of Bloodhound, the cheering strangled into deathly silence. The silence was not spoiled, but rather accentuated by the mournful note of the wind in her rigging and the muted throb of her engines.